This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Every month, members of the West Virginia Board of Education are updated on the progress of their intervention counties, or the school systems that the state has taken over. Right now, the state has partial control of Gilmer County and is in full control of Fayette County, which is struggling to keep many of its buildings standing. As Ashton Morrow reports, that's why the county is trying to push a more than $65 million school bond.
I won't fight it because it needs to happen for the greater good of the whole county.
Amanda Skaggs is the mother of three students in the Fayette County school system. She got emotional as she spoke to members of the State Board of Education during their April meeting about the closure of Gatewood Elementary School, where two of her three children are students. Their classrooms are heated with electrical space heaters because the school's coal-fired boiler system gave out. Shauna Starks has a son in the fifth grade at Collins Middle School, which was deemed, quote, not suitable for occupancy after a structural review earlier this year. That review came after the roof of the band building collapsed under the weight of heavy snow. Starks also spoke before the state board.
Anyway, I have promised my children that I will do everything in my power to fix this. And I believe that we finally, with this bond, have a chance to do that.
Starks and Skaggs were just a few of the parents who attended the board meeting to speak in favor of the school bond signed by the state superintendent in February. The bond will allow the county to move forward with their Comprehensive Educational Facilities Plan, or CEFP. CEFPs are completed by counties every 10 years to guide local boards of education in maintaining, building, or closing schools in their districts. Fayette County's plan calls for the closure and merger of nearly 10 schools. Serena Starcher is the state-appointed Fayette County superintendent.
The total projects in this bond order between local dollars, SBA, and the bond itself will total $66,500,000.
Should the voters in Fayette County approve the bond, property taxes for the average homeowner will increase by anywhere from $22 to $330, depending on the value of their homes. That money will make up the bond's $39 million in local funds. $12 million of that will pay for the construction of a new elementary school in Mount Hope. But Starcher is hoping to get an additional $25 million from the state School Building Authority, a state agency that doles out money for school building projects based on need across the state. That money will match local dollars for three additional projects: a new Collins Middle School, the renovation of Midland Trail High School for consolidation, and replacing the heating system at Anstead Middle School.
The SBA, although they can't give me a guarantee right now, they've said that the SBA staff has indicated should the bond pass, they feel confident that we could go to the SBA next December and receive funding.
Should the bond pass? But a bond hasn't passed in Fayette County since 1973. Attempts in 2001 and 2009 both failed miserably, likely because of the consolidation plans the bonds would fund. This go-round, parents like Starks and Skaggs have banded together to host community meetings across the county, facilitated by the United Way of Southern West Virginia. Last Monday, they held a meeting at Valley High School near Montgomery. Should the bond pass, Valley would get a new combined football-baseball field on campus at a total cost of about $2.5 million of local funds. At that meeting, Terry Abbott of Idina Village shared his concerns about the bond.
Them increase taxes and $60 million of that money is going to the other districts.
It's difficult to hear in the noisy cafeteria, but Abbott asked, how is he supposed to convince people in the Valley to vote for a tax increase when more than $60 million of the planned bond funds is going to other parts of the county? He called it a hard sell.
I perfectly agree. They need schools up there. I agree. They need the buildings. But at the same time, you know, that's the first question I get. Why are we going to put $60 million in up there and $2.7 down here?
Abbott says he wants the bond to pass, not because the former football coach wants his alma mater to have a new football field, but because he wants qualified educators teaching his grandkids. For him, consolidation means fewer classroom vacancies, something the entire state is struggling with.
I got a good education. I had a tremendous education. And you know, somewhere we fail. We've let everything go downhill. The buildings are in disarray. You know, we can't keep building it. We can't pay the bills. My opinion is Valley needs qualified, certified teachers more than they need a football field.
Fayette County will hold two more community meetings in the Mount Hope and Meadowbridge areas, where consolidation of their high school has been hotly contested. The school bond will be put to a vote on June 13th. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in Smithers.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:49. Rain and thunderstorms in our forecast today and tonight. Temperatures today in the 60s to near 70 degrees. Lows in the 40s tonight. Mostly sunny tomorrow, but there's still a chance of some rain and thunderstorms popping up. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by WVU Arts and Entertainment, presenting Pittsburgh Ballet Theater's performing Beauty and the Beast at the WVU Creative Arts Center, April 26th. Information at 304-293-SHOW.
If the coal industry has started to leave Appalachia, the American West is now coal's new home base. Production has dipped slightly in Wyoming, but the state still produces 40% of the nation's coal, far more than any other state. As part of the Allegheny Front series on the future of coal, reporter Clay Scott went to America's current capital of coal and found the industry's imprint on the West runs deep.
Traveling south of Gillette, Wyoming, through an arid and austere country once home to herds of bison, you pass coal mine after coal mine for 70 uninterrupted miles, carving deep troughs into the prairie. Seen from a distance, the immensity of the mining activity is striking. But descend into one of these open pit mines for the first time, and it's hard not to be overwhelmed by the sheer scale of things. Blasting teams set explosive charges to loosen the steep sides of what look like gigantic sunken amphitheaters. Colossal digging machines called coal shovels load hundreds of tons at a time into haul trucks three stories high. Huge bulldozers rip away layers of dirt to get at rich coal seams, and clouds of brown and black dust darken the air. At the Eagle Butte mine near Gillette, J.D. Deechy showed me the coal shovel he's operated for Alpha Coal for a decade, 7 days on, 7 days off. On a frigid day, my hands stick to the metal rungs as we climb into the $50 million machine.
You drive your truck to the dirt shovel, get a load of dirt, take it to the dump, come back and do it again and again and again and again for 12 and a half hours, minus your half hour lunch break. But it is very, very repetitious.
It is repetitious work, often dangerous, and the hours are long. But coal is an important part of the economy of this sparsely populated state, and the 7,000 or so jobs it provides are highly sought after. Miners like Carrie C., who's worked in coal for 30 years, have raised their families with their earnings. But it's more than just a paycheck.
Because we are willing to go out and run that equipment and mine the coal and bring it out of the earth, and we work holidays 24/7 through snow, through rain, through all kinds of weather, then everybody else has the luxuries of electricity and running water.
The coal that's mined each year in the Powder River Basin, 400 million tons of it, supplies power to millions of people. It's lower in polluting sulfur than eastern coal and closer to the surface. But while you might not have to blow the tops off mountains to get at the seams, coal mining here has still impacted the land and the people who depend on it in profound and far-reaching ways.
From our perspective in here, it really seems that most of the time we're the only ones that don't have the ranch for sale and hoping to sell it to a coal company.
That's L.J. Turner. His family has ranched in the southern end of the Powder River Basin since 1916.
This is home. It's been home for all of our lives, and it's going to continue to be so.
We're standing on a low ridge at the eastern edge of LJ's ranch, looking out at the North Antelope Rochelle coal mine. The mine sprawls for miles over pastures where cattle once grazed. Historically, ranchers in this area have depended on public grazing leases to make a living, but those leases are superseded by mineral development, and the Turner family has lost thousands of acres to mining. This is, or it was, a landscape of rolling grassland punctuated by rugged breaks where mule deer took shelter. But the contours of the land have been altered to get at the coal. By law, the coal companies are bound to reclaim the land when they finished mining it.
The coal miners over here, whenever they first moved in and started taking our pastures, they said, oh, you just wait until we reclaim this land. It's going to be so good, you won't believe how good it's going to be. And that's been 30 years ago, maybe. And our cows have never had a mouthful of reclaimed grass in those 30 years.
Of even greater concern, says LJ, is the steady drying up of local water sources, which he attributes to coal mining.
Are they going to be able to reclaim these aquifers in the creek? Because I don't think they can. They say that they can, but it's all they're doing is talking theory. And here I'm living the practical thing.
In western Montana, at his home along the Bitterroot River, I met Bill Ritchie. He's someone who's given a lot of thought to the impacts of western coal mining on water. Over more than 20 years, he managed several mines in the Powder River Basin.
There are problems. There are water problems. There are things that are hard to replace and hard to reclaim. The real complex stuff was the environmental issues. Tracking the water, or trying to dewater, trying not to pollute streams. Really took a lot of work, a lot of effort, and a lot of money.
When Bill first started working in coal, he says, Western mines were being applauded for producing a product that was much cleaner than Eastern coal. But toward the end of his career, he told me, he started to re-examine some of his assumptions about coal mining.
We didn't understand the impact on the atmosphere and the greenhouse gases. We worked on clean coal projects from the time I was first starting in the coal business, and they still are working on them. There is no such thing currently as clean coal. The net result is it's still polluting the atmosphere.
All coal mines, says Bill Ritchie, including the ones he managed, begin by taking the coal that's closest to the surface and easiest and cheapest to get at. As the mine goes longer in its life, the coal will be deeper and thinner seamed and more costly to recover.
Hopefully someday they will figure out a technology on a commercial scale that can burn coal cleanly. But what a pity if we've mined all the coal and burned it and polluted the hell out of everything. Then when it's time, when we have the ability to burn it well, we don't have the resource.
Bill Ritchie says the type of clean coal technology he's talking about is not likely to be perfected anytime soon. In the meantime, coal is certain to remain a feature of the economy and landscape of the West for many years to come. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Clay Scott in Gillette, Wyoming.
This story is part of a series, The Future of Coal, a collaboration of the Allegheny Front, West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and Inside Energy. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.